Good morning, everybody. It's Mike on the mic here at 9 o'clock on the dot. And glad to be here today. Some of you may have noticed that I wasn't here last week because I was visited by the lovely stomach bug that's getting everybody. And I want to give a shout out to the band, The Sins, C-Y-N-Z. They were going to be here with me last week, and I actually did the right thing, everybody. I called Cindy up, and I said, listen, I'll do it. I'll go in. I said, but I've got this thing. She goes, oh, no. We're on tour. You know, if I get a cold or something, that would be, I've got asthma. So I did the right thing. So once they said, let's just, you know, do it later on the phone or something, I canceled. So sorry to The Sins. Thank you so much for being understanding, and I'll talk to you again soon on the phone. So it is Saturday, March the 25th. It is my nephew Max's birthday. Happy birthday, Max. How the hell did you get to be 22 years old? I've got two guests today. At the 10 o'clock hour coming up is Alan Williams, Dr. Alan Williams. And we'll talk about all sorts of things, including the bands and his actual profession. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that. Actual profession, he's got two of them. He's a singer-songwriter, and he's a professor of ethnomusicology. Yeah, I know. I know, but it's going to be cool. So that's at 10 o'clock, along with our friend Mike Stewart. Now, a little bit after 9 a.m., I'm not alone here in the studio, and I'll give you a hint. I would think that he slept in it, but no, the fez is not on. I don't see you too often without the fez, but
if I'm not wearing it, nobody knows who I am. I mean, everyone is like, I can't believe people don't recognize Superman without his glasses, you know, or Clark Kent with his glasses. It's like, yeah, I'm not wearing a fez. I can go through life incognito. I wasn't thinking of that when I put it on, but it's brilliant.
Yeah, it is. So, everybody, that was our pal Smitty. Smitty, welcome.
Oh,
early
Mike,
in the
this
morning
is so cool. Well,
to
you know,
WMFO.
We do run into each other in Clubland,
we do.
I really, you know, I am up early in the morning doing all kinds of you know, things, band and non-band related, and I always have your show on Saturday mornings, and it's just I come down here enough on my own. I'm going to be the host of On the Town with Mikey D on Wednesday this week,
yeah.
And I thought, you know what? What a great opportunity if you had the time, and you did, thank you, for me to come on in and see you, say hi.
Hi.
And just, you know, have some, you know, fun times with you, you know, playing music.
Yeah, well, I love to do it. We both have the thing where music is, it would be unheard of for us not to have music in any given day, somehow, some way, you know, and you make it, I play it. You know? So, you know, anyway, a lot of people know of you. I just mentioned that you make music. You have two bands right now.
Yes, I am the drummer in Little Billy Lost and the front person. I hate saying lead singer because my backing singers have better voices. Actually, the band members have better vocals than I do. I'm the front person.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear me sing either.
I mean, I get the job done, but you know, you won't be seeing me on American Idol anytime too soon.
Oh, well, that could be a whole other conversation about American Idol. You brought it up. No, we don't have to.
No, by the way, a very good friend of mine from Detroit who's well-established was singing the praises of American Idol. The last person I would have expected to do so. You know, it's one of these weird things. People like try and dismiss it as a karaoke contest, but it's just like most of the people on the show have a musical background. They can sing.
Yeah.
Now, what I don't like is that it does make it seem like it's way too easy. You go from zero to a national thing. You know, trust me, I am a man of a certain age. I've been fighting it out for decades out there in music land. You know, nothing that easy. But, you know, some of the stories are...
They are.
You know, moving and stuff.
It's a reality show.
Yeah. And when it's hokey, it's hokey. And sometimes they get some good talent.
That's right. And it's evolved since the days of Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
It's a different show now.
Yes.
So, okay. Anyway, let's get off of that.
All right. So that we talked about. So, but I just got that message from somebody last night. That's why I brought it up.
All right. right. So once again, you've helped me out here. You helped me segue right into Detroit. You're a Detroit person.
So I was born and raised in Detroit.
Yeah.
And I was very fortunate. I was like 7 years old when the Beatles popped on Ed Sullivan back in 1964.
A seminal moment for so many people.
Are you kidding? It changed my life.
Yes.
It was like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It was kind of like who saw the Beatles and who didn't. The Monday after that Sunday show, so I'm in like first grade going on second grade. Actually, I always say I'm seven. I might have been six, but because I'm pretty sure I was in the first grade. Actually, you know what? Correction. I think I was six.
It was 64, right?
64, yeah. So you could tell whose parents let the kids stay up and watch it and who didn't, because the kids who didn't see it, they're like, what are you talking about? Are you insane? And all of us who saw it, I mean, we were still electrified from the show. I mean, people scream. Ed Sullivan was so flustered. He had no idea what to do. And, you know, and I was hooked. And then from there, you had, you know, the British Invasion and all the garage rock bands coming out of every suburb in the country. I was very fortunate being that, you know, my backyard was Detroit. I had a front row seat to Motown. You know, so the beautiful part about Detroit is Detroit was playing all this great music. I assumed the entire country.
It was originating all this great music.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I found out later on, it's like, no, a lot of cities outside of Detroit did not have this great music. And to that point, I was not a Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band fan, but I was absolutely an early on Bob Seger and the System, you know, way back in the day, heavy music, what do you call it? I'm spacing on all the songs, but you know, he was electrifying, and he was like, they didn't call it garage rock then, but it really was the birth of garage rock. And later on, you know, people coined the term back in the early 90s with you know, White Stripes and bands like that. But they always give credit to the early, you know, suburban garage rock bands. And you know, Susie Quattro, she wasn't a friend of mine, but she was only a couple years older than me. I knew of her band, The Pleasure Seekers. I knew they were playing, you know, at these different, you know, clubs and other side shows. My parents would not let me go to a lot of these because it's like, oh, you know, I'm like 10, 11, 12 at the time. And it's like, oh, no, it's, you know, hepatitis, drugs, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But it's just, so I really, it's kind of funny. I was inundated with just all kinds of brilliant music back then. So, you know, start playing in bands when I got older,
All next right, thing. So let's step back to that.
Okay.
So 7-year-old Smitty Smitty. Of course, you went by your given name back then. But,
right, Michael.
I can ask you about that. But yeah, we share that name. But when, you know, after you saw that that explosion on Ed Sullivan, did you start to realize you wanted to make music and not just...
Right.
I'm sure that you were a fan, obviously, first.
Well, you're right. I didn't know what to do with it anyways.
Yeah. So when did you start to play? And was it drums or was it...
Well, no, it was definitely drums. Yeah. But the wacky thing, and I am not a virtuoso by any stretch of the imagination, but my grandparents had one of those stand-up pianos in the family room.
Upright.
And I would go in there and just play all the time. Now, was I playing anything? No, it's all nonsensical. But as I was making up chords and playing, I could tell what a sour note was and what an actual chord. And I was like, you know, hitting like, you know, seventh, you know, removed, you know, I mean, I was making up chords, but when they sounded right, I was like, oh,
yeah,
listen to that. And
there's dissonance in this cognitive dissonance.
And so it was that's going back to like 4, 5, 6 years old. Yeah. So I already had that kind of in my background. Beatles come on, I'm like losing my mind over them. My parents, God bless them. The following Christmas, they just got me the worst, you know, Sears, you know, tin can, you know, paper drum kit. I mean, they meant well. And so I started playing on that. And a kid down the street, he was an only child, Drew Brophy, his parents bought him a inexpensive guitar. I can't remember what it was, a small amp. A microphone that can plug into the amp with the guitar, and just a slightly better crummy drum kit, slightly better. And so now I'm like 7 going on 8, and in his basement. And he said, you know, Mikey, you want to, you know, I wasn't Smitty till later. You know, Mikey, you want to come on over and I want to put a band together. So he got me and another kid on the block, Dave Marsteller. And he put Dave on the drums and he put me on the vocals. Uh-huh. And we started playing I think this is the Monkees route. We were like I started singing a Monkey song.
Very nice.
And I was fine, you know, for 7 going on 8.
Sure.
Dave couldn't play the drums to save his life. Now, you would think neither could I. And so then Drew was just like, you know, Mikey, can you try the drums? And Dave, you sing. Sit down at the drums. No lessons whatsoever. I don't even know how I did it. Boom, dat, boom, boom, dat, boom, dat. I mean, I had a beat. I was crossing my left hand over my right arm. I mean, maybe I was watching Ringo. I have no idea, yeah. You know? And God bless Dave. He couldn't sing either.
What's he doing these days?
Yeah, who knows? No. But that was the last rehearsal with Dave. And so Drew and I, we would just get together. I'd play drums on that crummy kit. And, he had his guitar and amp and the vocal. So then, and I was going over there all the time to play. So my parents, God bless them, they knew this guy. He was ended up being the future gym teacher for my high school, but he was a gym teacher for a rival school at the time. Mm-hmm. He played drums in college, and it was a really beat up, falling apart Ludwig, a real Ludwig drum kit. And I think they bought it off of him for like $100, you know, kick, drum, snare, tom. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't think there was a floor tom. A floor tom.
Did he end up teaching you as well?
No.
You just bought it off him?
I just bought it off of him. And so now I had like a real drum kit down in Drew's basement, and I was playing that, but then a beautiful thing happened. There was a guy, he actually, he's well-established in the Los Angeles music community. He is so off-the-charts talented. He actually, scribes the music for, like, concerts. And when someone's going in the studio with an orchestra, he, like, writes everybody's notes for what they're, you know, so they can read the music. He's been a wunderkind at music his entire life. He's my age. So his older brother played in a cover band. He came down to the basement with Drew and I, and he sat behind the drum kit. Oh, my goodness, did I get, like, a lesson. It was like, I thought I was pretty good.
Yeah.
This guy really, and it was like, oh. And so I knew I had to up my game. Because he played like, you know, guitar, bass, drums, piano. I mean, he was like, he was off to the races. And he's making a very good living. He wrote a musical a couple years ago. He's like all set. He makes a real living doing music. So I started doing that. And I played this Ludwig kit until it fell apart. And Drew and I, you know, we stopped being best friends. He moved away. I moved away. And then I had another friend in junior high. He had a drum kit in his basement. And it was just like, oh, there you go. And after school, I go to his place and play drums, and he'd play drums. And then I got a high school buddy who had a drum kit. He went on and got a record deal later on. Mm. But he had his mom didn't care. We'd take the stereo in his basement, crank it as loud as we could, and play along to the music, Alice Cooper and, you know, everybody else. And so it was always there percolating.
I can see what's happening to you.
Yeah.
So you mentioned moved away.
Yeah.
When did you move away to Boston?
Yes.
Should we talk? You had a band, I'm sure.
Yeah.
An actual band in Detroit.
Well, I had multiple bands in Detroit. And fast forward, I won't go through all the list of the bands I was in. But so I end up playing in Figures on a Beach. Mm-hmm. There's interest from Sire Records, and the management that we had in Detroit, it's pretty much ran its course. And
but you guys had a huge, let's call it an MTV hit.
Well, that was after we got onto Sire, but when we were back in Detroit and still kind of figuring it out, we basically knew we had done everything we could in Detroit for the club scene, and we had some pretty good shows, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, okay, we got to move. Thought of Chicago, too close. Thought of LA, nah, I don't want to do it. We had already done a number of shows in New York, but thank goodness we did have to rent rehearsal spaces a couple of times, depending upon what the show was or whatever was going on. Rehearsing in New York City is It was darn near impossible in the 70s.
Then, yeah.
You know, it's darn near impossible now. Yeah. You want to be a band in New York? Do yourself a favor. Move to New Jersey, Queens. You know, Brooklyn's already filled up. You know, you really got to start moving out. You know, you can have New York City within your zone, but no bands actually. I mean, it was a miracle that CBGBs and all the bands that played there happened when they did. There was no place for bands to rehearse. And so we had that. It was like, oh, man, we really, you know, would like to go to New York. But through an opportunity with one of the band members in Figures on a Beach, Perry Tell, a situation opened up where we could come to Boston, get a rehearsal spot. We were already driving 5.5 hours to Chicago from Detroit. New York's like 4.5, 5. It's like, you know what? Let's set up camp in Boston, and then we can do our showcases and whatever the heck's going on in New York from there. And that was in 1985. So now,
were you aware of the amazing scene even in 1985?
Right,
it was huge here.
So we found out really fast, and it was kind of funny because we had already done a lot of decent, you know, shows in Detroit, opened up for the B-52s, 4,000 plus people, sold out shows, 1,000 people. We got out here, nobody cared.
Right.
You know, and it was just kind of like, you know, we were going around with our press kit and all the things that we had done, and we had already put out a couple of EPs on a indie label back in Detroit, Metro America.
Nice.
And so we went to these clubs. We had a promo pack ready, cassette, you know, remember cassettes?
I do.
You know, yeah, and all that stuff. And everyone said, yeah, love to have you. You can do our audition night on Monday or Tuesday. You know, and I'm talking like every single club in the city, like just mention them. We sent them a pack. Yeah, you got them Monday or Tuesday. So the last place we went to, because it was pie in the sky, is we went to, I'm not sure if it was Spit then or Metro, but Paul V was the DJ. And we got our promo pack, and we walk up to the door to give our promo pack to whoever was at the club. And the bouncer opens up the door, and Paul V is playing one of our songs on the dance floor. The doorman looks at us and goes, "What are you doing here?" And I look at him and I go,
"Listening to our song."
I go, "You hear that song on the dance floor?" He goes, "Yeah, we're that band.
Yeah.
We came here to get a show." He got a big smile on his face. He goes, "Wait here." So he goes out. The actual booking person wasn't there, but I forget who the manager was that night. They took us in. Next thing you know, we're doing like a Wednesday showcase at Metro.
What a story.
You know, and it's just, and what's weird is that, you know, this is the funny thing about any town, not just Boston, any town. So everyone's like, you know, you got the opening night, you do Monday, Tuesday, whatever. We get a showcase night at one of the bigger, better clubs in Boston. Nobody was happy for us. They were like, who are those guys? You know, I mean, obviously, we were well-honed. Our music was, you know, really good. And bam, right into a premier club.
Right. I mean, you've got all these bands that are local.
Right.
And you can look around and see their blood, sweat, and tears all around.
Yeah.
And they're like, who the hell are you?
And top of which, because we came from Detroit, we did have that electronic sound. Which really, for the most part, yes, there, you know, it's a popular thing, but there's never really been, and correct me if I'm wrong, a Boston electronic sound, you know, sort of scene. There are dance clubs, there are bands that, I mean, very popular bands that use synths and samples now.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we showed up in 85, they were like, who the hell are you guys? You know, we don't have anything like this.
No.
And what's funny is... So probably the first big band that came along with, you know, using digital sounds is Thinktree. Thinktree was invented 2 years after we moved here. I have said that, you know, even though Figures on a Beach sounded nothing like Thinktree, they might have, and they did see us early on and thought, oh, we can do that. We can do it better,
yeah.
But we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of showed up. We slugged it out for as many years as we could here in Boston. We were always bigger everywhere else, and it was a very interesting education on the Boston music scene. So all the, you know, neighborhoods and, you know, Bags
and just
right on down the line, we were hip to all of them. And everyone's like, well, we don't know what to do with you. You're too electronic. You know, what do we do? Now, and then, of course, you know, later on, Nine Inch Nails and everything else. It's like, oh, that's what you guys were kind of doing. It's like, yeah.
So how did you evolve?
It's kind of funny. At that point, I was actually doing a combination Simmons electronic drum kit and an actual acoustic drum kit. I'd been playing the Simmons electronic drum kit for a really long time. Much like the Ludwig drum kit back when I was a little kid, I finally beat it into the ground. Mm-hmm. And so I became an all-acoustic drum kit guy. And you could just see, you know, there are, many things, it's a double-edged sword working with electronic and digital and triggered kind of music. It was just easier and faster to write music and not have any of those things involved. Now, to this day, I do use samples for like background noises to have fun with them. But in terms of playing to a click track, you know, I did it. I was raised on it. I know how to do it. It's really hard to do and do it correctly. I mean, oh, I know how to play the click track. It's like, no, you don't. You can in the studio. You have multiple takes. You got the cans on your head. When you're doing it live, playing to a click track or a sample loop, you know, it takes some training.
Yeah, a click track or a sample loop are perfect digital tenor and human beings are not.
Right.
And they're not supposed to be, and that's really what makes music awesome.
Right.
Is the human element.
There you go.
So fast forward, you know, you're still in Boston, you know, thankfully. And I'm sure you've been through many ruminations of bands and
yes,
stuff.
Absolutely.
And here we are, you know, into the 2000s. And tell me about how each one of these bands came about.
Well, it was kind of symbiotic. I had no plans for having a live band when I was putting together the music for Smitty Smitty, and it was just Smitty Smitty at the very beginning. I knew I could write music. I had actually written the music, not the lyrics or sang them, but the music for about 2-3 hits with Figures on a Beat. So I knew how to write a song. So I started writing the songs and crafting them together on my own, and it finally got to a point where I just looked at my better half and mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to drop some money and go in the recording studio and put this together. Even if there's no band, I know this stuff is better than just sitting on my computer, you know, playing it for my friends. So I went in and, you know, I had already played shows with James, and when he was playing, James Melanson, when he's playing in other bands. I knew the Boston music scene, the late, great Trick Wallace, you know, who, you know, God bless him. I can't believe, you know, he's no longer with us, but he came in the studio. He was in the first iteration of Smitty Smitty. Eddie Nowak and Sam Evola.
Crazy Eddie.
Yes. Well, we played together in one of the bands leading up those Famous Monsters. And I already knew how talented they were. And I was good friends with Tim Katz. You know, he's a good guitar player, bass player. So I knew enough people. I said, here are all that stuff I've got already recorded on there. You do the bass line. You do the guitar line. You know, I brought in people to sing and all this fun stuff. And
so that was Smitty.
That was Smitty.
How did Mikey become Smitty?
So you don't have to Google this. I forget how many millions there are, but there are Michael Smiths all over the planet.
You think?
Yeah, just a few.
Yeah.
Small. I know. A factoid. There are more Jim Sullivans in Boston than Michael Smiths. That's how, you know, but just, you know, it's kind of, but there's a boatload of Jim Sullivans and just slightly fewer Michael Smiths. Mm-hmm. Well, social media started becoming popular. And, you know, it's like, man, if I want people to find my music, you know, Michael Smith,
yeah,
it's like,
luck.
No, good luck, no. And so, you know, as anybody who knows how I play drums knows that I lift. Profusely from Bunny Carlos from Cheap Trick. I mean, I'm a huge fan, always have been. You know, there's a very long list of drummers that I admire, but I literally steal what is it? Amateurs borrow, professionals steal.
That's right. What a great, yeah.
Things from Bunny Carlos. I, you know, change it up ultimately. But he, big, and so early on when I was following Cheap Trick, you know, back in the late 70s, a lot of writers would write Bunny Carlos's name as Bunny, B-U-N-N-Y, sure, like the hop-along animal, Carlos. And then later on, they figured out it was Bun E. Right. Carlos. So I thought, geez.
I see. Okay.
Well, so, of course, I immediately did a Google on Smitty Smitty. It's just Smitty twice. Gone, gone, gone. Of course it's gone. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, wait a minute. Smit E is basically Smitty. So if I'm Smit E Smitty, maybe I can get people to say Smitty Smitty. And that never happened, by the way. Everyone loves to stop off at that E.
I'm guilty of that too.
Everybody, even me. Smitty. It's just kind of fun. E, what's the E stand for? And I got a list on that.
Yeah.
So I just figured, you know,
excellent. I'm sure it's excellent.
Excellent. That's right.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's an homage to Bunny Carlo, Smitty Smitty. It's a fun name. And so I just, yeah, Smitty Smitty. Bam, done.
Very interesting. I mean, you know, knowing you and looking at you and seeing you out there, I mean, that it fits for some reason.
It does fit.
You're a Smitty Smitty.
I am a Smitty Smitty. Yeah. And it's kind of funny, you know, when I do interviews with the people who don't know me, it's like, what do you want me to call you? Smit? Smit E? It's like, no, call me Smitty. Make it easy. It's Smitty.
Mm-hmm.
See me on the street? Smitty. You know, and it is kind of funny, though. There are people out there who really think, maybe I'm like a foreigner of some kind, that my parents named me Smit. It's like, no, my parents did not name me Smit.
Stage name is what it's
right,
called.
Exactly. Smitty Smitty. Yep. But that's the story on that.
So we talked about the two bands. You're also at the very beginning of your burgeoning DJ career here.
No. Oh, there's one part. So the part of the story where where Symbiotic was is at the same time I'm putting together the Smitty recording thing, James started talking to Fred Pinot. And that's, you know, the Little Billy Lost didn't exist as a name yet. And I was already working with James, and I love James. James is crazy.
How's his shoulders doing?
You know, he's, you know, it's one of these things. I'm not even sure what the regimen is for having that heal. I think you just kind of have to leave it alone. And then maybe after it's healed, you can work on strength. I think he's got a couple shows coming up with either Pretendica or Hey Blondie. And I can't talk about it because it's 99% there, but it looks like there might be a June show with Little Billy Lost and Smitty Smitty. More to come on that one.
Mm-hmm.
But right at the same time I was doing the early Smitty Smitty, I started playing drums with James and Fred Pinot, and it was really kind of funny. Of course, Fred Pinot and James both know how to write songs. They've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
I've been part of the songwriting process, you know, going back however far. But the funny thing is, even though I'm very free with my input, I don't have to do anything with the songwriting. It really is just James and Fred. They come in with an idea. Patrick and I, we sit down and listen to what's going on, and we piece it together. But it's just like, it's the easiest gig. And the songs are great.
You couldn't ask for a better group of people or musicians.
I'm luckiest SOB on the planet.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it really is just so freeing and liberating. I do have to drive an hour to get to James's place in Haverhill. Yeah, I know. But other than that, I mean, they're a dream to work with. And it's one of the reasons why Little Billy Lost is able to put together shows so easily. First off, we're only a four-piece, and so it's less things to consider. But they just make it so easy. James is so good. You know, going in the recording studio, I mean, James is ready to sing multiple guitar parts.
Yeah. I mean, in a town like this with so many bands, to have a known commodity in the membership of the band...
So Fred, I mean, the Atlantics, give
me
a break.
Please.
I mean, and the great thing is he is the coolest guy to work with. He is the coolest. A lot of people with half that much success, attitude, you know, smug.
He's also a very silly dude, so I like that a lot.
Crazy silly.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And he's just, and you know, it's such a joy. Patrick is so just incredible. He's such a great guy, such a great bass player.
Yep.
So that happened literally at the same time. And I am not naturally the kind of person that wants to play in more than one band, but they were so good. And on the first time we got together, you know, they came with the ideas, but we came up with Made in the USA and Seyd Finest Dance and
back in 2018.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And just immediately. And so when I came home from rehearsal, my better half, Lucia, looked at me and she goes, "Well, how'd it go?" It's like, I wasn't even expecting it to be that good. It was crazy good. So it's kind of like, you know what? This way I can keep my drumming chops going. I can play with these incredibly talented people. But then I can also push ahead with Smitty. And so, you know, I didn't have a band immediately after we put together Smitty, the first release, Just a Modern Guy. But, you know, with the encouragement of James and Eddie and Sam and, you know, a bunch of people, it's like, no, you can do this. So I started reaching out to people. And that's how we get, you know, with me, Smitty and the Fez Tones is a 9-person band. Yeah. Ridiculous.
Subtle and serious.
And they're so talented. And obviously, you know, they have success in their own bands by their own right.
Yes.
But I am so lucky to be able to perform with those people.
Yeah, Smitty and the Fez Tones, I like that. When you look at all the people that you mentioned, 9, did you say?
Yeah.
Yeah,
including
me,
9.
Yeah, tongue in cheek, you know, a little bit, because you are characters in the band, you know?
Well, they picked up on me, I picked up on them,
right.
We're having fun.
Yeah, but, you know, the musical product is not only fun, it's great.
So the comparison I like to use, not that I'm saying we are them, is it's kind of closer to like a B-52's Devo,
yeah,
Cramps kind of thing, and that we're having fun. It's definitely tongue-in-cheek, but we're not a joke band.
Nope.
It's like people who think, oh, we're a fun band, but we're not a joke band, not by any stretch. And people, you know, and I have, I've heard of you guys. Aren't you a joke band? It's like, no, sorry, I can't help you with that one.
Right.
If having fun is a crime in rock and roll, it didn't used to be, it's I can't help you.
Shouldn't
we're having
be.
Fun.
So let's talk about the success that you're having at the same time with two different bands. I mean, both of these songs that we're going to play, Smit, are in heavy rotation here, you know?
I get the charts, not just from you guys, but I have a couple companies that file this stuff, and WMFO is always at the top.
So let's talk about Little Billy Lost first. When I was coming in here, I've been here since 2012 or so, and in 2018, we added, you know, that EP. And I said, who are these guys? And I looked at the membership, and I'm like, wow. And here we are, you know, now in 2023. I don't know how that happened. But we're talking about Wash Your Sins Away. Talk a little bit about that song.
Well, so this was another idea that Fred brought to the band. And it's always great. He's always apologizing at the beginning. Oh, I don't know if this is any good. I haven't really figured everything out yet. It's just, I don't know, you guys tell me if you like. And he starts, you know, scratching through it. And, you know, Patrick and I, we like look at each other. It's like, I hear it, don't you? He's like, yeah. And we just start playing along, you know. And James, you know, he knows exactly what, you know, how much, you know, salt and pepper to add to the mix. And, you know, it's just one of these songs that kind of came together. And that's the best songs always come together quickly. They don't have to, but 9 times out of 10, your best songs come together really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Or the antithesis of that is I hear all the time from different artists that, oh my God, that song is 20 years old and I couldn't figure out how to finish it. And finally, in a notebook, I found it and here it is.
There you go. Well, that happens too.
Yeah. So Smitty and the Fez Tones. You know, Rebel. I mean, David Bowie. You know that's your homage.
Well, so yeah, so obviously, it's kind of funny. We strictly are not they're a glam band, but there's clearly a glam band ethos floating around, and that, you know,
there
dressing
is.
Up and, you know, and that kind of thing and having fun. You know, David Bowie's. I figure. Or what I was trying to do is any cover that we would do live, I want it to be representative of who we are as a band. And obviously, David Bowie is really easy. It's like a lot of my musical philosophy came out of that era when I was in high school and he was coming up.
Yeah.
And the whole deal, the first Bowie song that we did, we never recorded it, but we did Panic in Detroit. That was in our first set here in Boston, and I knew we were going to be playing a big show in Detroit, and it's like, no, I got to do Panic in Detroit.
Makes sense.
So we did that. Huge success live. And so then I was like, geez, you know, what else can we do? And I just started toying around. This was actually before David Bowie passed away.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, before. Okay. And I was toying around with different compositions on how to attack it. Because the one thing that I am a firm believer in is I never want to cover a song and have the have it sound just like the song you're
karaoke,
covering.
Yeah.
Right. Or B, have it be recognizable from the very beginning. Oh, that's that. It's like, no. In a perfect world, I don't want people figuring out what the song is that I'm covering. In the best case scenario, till we get to the chorus. You know, I mean, there's so many iconic sounds in Rebel Rebel. It's like, you know, so you hear, as soon as you hear the guitar, da, 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 it's like, oh, yeah, he's doing Rebel Rebel.
Well, you know, and talk about iconic, there's iconic lyrics, too, going all the way back to the Beatles. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There it is. Yeah. That's in there.
Well, so then the other thing is I have played in a number of bands where, you know, I would suggest something really outlandish. And the response would be, oh, we're not there yet. We can't do that yet. And it's like, what are you waiting for? And now that I'm a man of a certain age, you know, going back a few years, I made a couple suggestions and was like, no, we can't do that. We're not there yet. It's like, we're in our 50s. What do you mean we can't do that yet? Right. Are you nuts?
What are we waiting for?
What are we waiting? So right. I figured, you know what? There are going to be some people who are going to be aghast that anybody would try to cover any song by David Bowie, let alone, you know, a song like
it's
Rebel
Been Girl. Done.
Yeah, no, exactly. And there was actually an artist who came out with one about 6 months before ours. Good version, but I knew because we had finished recording ours. It's like, no, it's not ours. I knew that our version of Rebel Rebel was really one to write home about. Now, is it the greatest version of all time? I don't know. It's pretty damn good.
If you listen to it with good speakers or headphones, you can hear the little accents of keyboard you've got in there. You can hear the things that you did. I'd like to play those songs.
Yes, you should. And you should.
And then we'll come back and talk a little bit about what's coming up Wednesday night.
All right.
And then.
We'll, okay.
All right. So first, it's Little Billy Lost and Wash Your Sins Away. And we'll come back after that. Let's segue right into Rebel Rebel by Smitty and the Fez Tones. This is WMFO in Medford.
Thank you. You got your mother in a whirl, not sure if you're a boy or a girl. Hey babe, your hair's all right. Hey babe, let's stay out tonight. You like me and I like it all. You love dancing and we look divine. You love bands when they play it hard. You want more and you want it fast. They put you down, they say I'm wrong. You tack a thing, you put them on. Yeah! Got your mother in a whirl, not sure if you're a boy or a girl. Hey babe, your hair's all right. Hey babe, let's stay out tonight. Stay out tonight.
It's 9:43 in the morning. It's Mike and, well, Mike and Mike, but Mike and Smitty here at WMFO. We just heard a couple of tracks from both of his bands that are active at the moment. We heard Little Billy Lust and Wash Your Sins Away, and then Smitty Smitty and the Fez Tones and Rebel Rebel. And let's talk a little bit about Wednesday night. We've got a perennial show here, Wednesday nights on the Town with Mikey D, and somehow you've wrangled yourself into that. sitting in my chair behind the board, hosting that show. You're going to do that Wednesday, this coming Wednesday.
Yeah. So basically, Joel asked me if I would be interested in being a DJ at WMFO. Doing one week every month. And I said, Joel, my heart says yes, but I am playing actively in two bands and, promotion and posters and videos and the whole thing. Love to do it. And he goes, well, what do you think if you, anytime there's a month that has five Wednesdays in it, mm-hmm. you do the fifth Wednesday? It's like, you know what? I can do that. So this month, we're happening to be in a month that has five Wednesdays. And so I'm up to bat for the second time.
Yep.
And I wouldn't say the first time was a full-on train wreck. But
no,
I,
it wasn't.
It was. But you know what? I did drive off the road a couple times. And I'm thinking this Wednesday, I'll drive off the road fewer times. Yeah. I'm very fortunate. He did it the first time. Andrew Wilson helped me with that show, and he said he's going to help me with the second show. I promise, Andrew, the next time I do a fifth Wednesday month guest hosting, I'll try and get it so I can do it on my own. But clearly having him in the room, you know, is very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So that's you guys go on the air at nine?
Nine
Wednesday
nine
night right
midnight.
Here,
yep.
WMFO, and Smitty's going to be behind the board, and I, you know, you're a very gregarious, happy guy, so you probably have to talk way back here so you don't blow up the microphone, but yeah. It's a lot of fun to hear you do that. Thank you so much for asking to come up here and telling us a bit about, you know, who you are and where you came from and those two songs. It's all
well,
great.
You're a great guy. You're a great show. You know, it's just, I'm sorry it took me so long to get in here. I mean, hopefully, you know, we can do it again under the same relaxed, just having fun,
sure.
You know, circumstances. But my pleasure to be here, Mike. Again, great show. I, you know, wake up to you every Saturday, you know, with my coffee. You know, I know you got Something About the Women comes on after this. And
yep.
Then Brian Young, you know, he's lights.
Yeah, we have a great Saturday here.
Yeah.
We do. All right. Smitty, Smitty, everybody.
Thank you,
really
Mike.
Really good.
Now everyone calls me Michael. Can I call you Michael? Or
I'm not a Michael. I'm a Mike.
You are a Mike.
You know,
all right.
You're
thank
one,
you,
you're
Mike.
You're one or the other.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you,
all
Mike.
Right. So Alan Williams coming up here at the top of the hour. I'm going to play a couple of songs to get us there. I'm going to start off with some new noise from our friend Rick Berlin, playing with his band, the Nickel and Dime Band. This is Step Back to start off this set right here at WMFO.
up your bones ever so quickly for me. Laughing now as the corners rolls on. Where did it go? Where did it go? I'm racing back in time to go pick it up. Where did it go? Where did it go?
Hey, it's WMFO in Medford. I'm Mike, and we just heard a couple of tracks. I'll tell you about those in a second, but at the moment, I am looking at the settings on my computer because I forgot to set this up correctly so you'll be able to hear what I'm playing next. So I seem to be good now. So we just heard a couple of tracks. We had Rick Berlin with the Nickel and Dime Band playing Step Back from their brand new record called True Story. Nervous Eaters, Boston's Own, Want You Like Before from Monsters and Angels. And that was Kia Caustic with Where Did It Go? And going to play a great new band called Hammered Saint. And this is called Dirty Work. It's WMFO.
Yeah. This is more like it.
You're listening to WMFO Bedford.